This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. A dual American Turkish citizen who left the United States as a teen with his brother to join the Islamic State terror group has been brought back to his hometown to face terror-related charges. Omar Kuzu appeared in a Texas courtroom Thursday, charged with conspiring to provide material support to IS, according to the U.S. Justice Department. Omar Kuzu again appeared in the courtroom. Prosecutors say he left the U.S. in October of 2014 with his brother bound for Istanbul, Turkey. Several months later, they were smuggled into Syria. He says that he was taken to Mosul, Iraq for weapons training and pledged allegiance to the IS leader, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. Upon his return to Syria, officials say that Kuzu, now 23, was captured along with about 400 IS fighters by U.S.-backed Syrian Democratic Forces in March after fleeing with about 400 other IS fighters as a terror group's self-declared caliphate in Syria ultimately collapsed. The United States on Friday will put out the intermediate, or pull out of the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty to develop its own new warheads after the Russians refused to destroy their new missiles. U.S. President Donald Trump is expressing optimism a new agreement can be made to replace the historic Cold War pact.
Russia would like to do something on a nuclear treaty, and that's okay with me. They'd like to do something, and so would I.
And U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres said the expiration of the treaty will heighten the threat of ballistic missiles.
The world will lose an invaluable break on nuclear war, and this will likely heighten, not reduce, the threat posed by ballistic missiles.
U.S. officials for months have complained that Russia turned a deaf ear to pleas from officials here and in Europe to halt its violations of the treaty, especially developing and fielding of the SS-8C8 ground launch cruise missiles. This is VOA News. North Korea on Friday fired unidentified short-range projectiles off its east coast in its third launch in a week. The Yonhap News Agency report said the South Korean Joint Chiefs of Staff said the projectiles were fired at 2:59 a.m. and 3:23 a.m. from a province into the East Sea. At the White House, President Trump said he was not concerned about the missiles, calling them very standard short-range devices.
Short-range missiles, we never made an agreement on that. I have no problem. We'll see what happens. But these are short-range missiles. They're very standard.
Meanwhile, at the UN, Britain, Germany, and France delivered a joint statement condemning the latest North Korean launches. President Trump is again boosting his trade war with China. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
It's another jump in the trade war between the world's two biggest economies. The president says slow-moving negotiations will continue, but starting September 1st, the U.S. will hit China with a new 10% tariff on about $300 billion in goods. He announced the move on Twitter while criticizing Beijing for not making good on promises to stop fentanyl sales to the U.S. and to buy more farm goods. Stocks tumbled fast, with the Dow going from up nearly 300 to down nearly 200 soon after the tweets. Sagar Magani at the White House.
U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo on Friday decried decades of bad behavior from China that hampered free trade, laying out a case at a Southeast Asian forum for Washington's escalating trade war with Beijing. U.S. criticism of China has been a running theme at the Bangkok forum. President Trump on Thursday announced from Washington an additional 10% tariff on $300 billion of Chinese goods in an ongoing trade war between the world's two largest economies. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said Thursday a dozen staffers had been sent to a Democratic Republic of Congo border city to manage Ebola cases there. The outbreak, which began a year ago Thursday, has now killed more than 1,800 people. 12 CDC employees will go to Goma, a major transit city near the Congolese border with Rwanda. On Thursday, the city confirmed its third case of Ebola. Henry Walkey, CDC Director of Preparedness and Emergence Infections, said that several factions make dealing with the outbreak more difficult.
Ongoing violence, armed conflict, community distrust, and other unprecedented problems have complicated public health response activities. As of July 31st, 2019, a total of 2,713 cases, including 148 in healthcare workers and 1,813 deaths, have been reported.
The announcement came hours after Rwanda briefly closed the border it shares with Congo. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, August 2nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe's opposition demands compensation as the country marks the first anniversary of the 2018 post-election violence.
Obviously, the families, they need compensation. They need to be recognized in public. But most importantly, public commitment by the government to make sure that we end this cycle where state securities are heavily involved in the political discourse of this country.
Daniel Molokele is the spokesman for the opposition MDC. Meanwhile, the United States has banned a former Zimbabwe military officer from entering the United States. Zambia's main opposition issues an ultimatum to President Edgar Lungu. And Liberia's Elections Commission chair says unknown individuals threatened to burn down his house last night.
Last night, between 6 and 7 p.m., security reported that more than 20-some men came out my gate, thinking battle cry or whatever they call that, and then demanded that if the election results were not given, they would bring my house with the people in there.
Jerome Kokoya is chair of Liberia's Elections Commission. Rwanda briefly closed its border on Thursday with DRC due to Ebola fears. A delegation of U.S. lawmakers wraps up a week-long trip to Ghana, and Amnesty International calls on Mauritania's new president to address the country's appalling human rights record. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabwe's main opposition party, human rights groups, and churches have marked the one-year anniversary of the army killing of about a dozen people protesting against the delayed release of last year's election results. As Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, some did not attend Thursday's ceremony because they are still recovering from the 2018 shooting.
On Thursday, Zimbabwe's opposition parties, human rights groups, and churches marked the one-year anniversary of the day when army killed about a dozen people protesting against the delayed release of election results. They say they will continue asking for divine intervention in this Southern African nation where the political landscape has been long tainted by violence. Loveday Muniz could not attend Thursday's event. He was caught in the melee on August 1, 2018. Since then, he has been unable to work or walk comfortably because of the bullet lodged in his right buttock.
I can no longer go to. With what has happened to me and where we are now, I just believe that there is a lot of abuse of human rights in Zimbabwe. Up to now, I haven't received any help pertaining to my injuries, any medical help from the government.
Doctors say the 30-year-old needs at least $15,000 to go to South Africa or India for an operation to remove the bullet, something that cannot be done in Zimbabwe without damaging Munese's nerves. At the event marking the army killings, Zimbabwe's main opposition party said Harare must compensate those injured like Munez as well as the families of those who were killed. Daniel Molokele, the spokesman for the opposition movement for democratic change, says the government's failure to do this shows that Harare is not taking seriously the issue of human rights.
Obviously, the families, they need compensation. They need to be recognized in public, but most importantly, public commitment by the government to make sure that we end this situation, this cycle. State securities are heavily involved in the political discourse of this country.
Rights group Amnesty International says it wants the soldiers that killed the protesters to be held accountable as per recommendations of a government-appointed commission. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
On the first anniversary of the 2018 post-election violence in Zimbabwe that left six people dead, the United States on Thursday placed a former commander of Zimbabwe's army on its targeted sanctions list for his alleged involvement. In a statement, the State Department said it had publicly designated Aslam Nyamo Sanyantwe for his involvement in gross violation of human rights. Zimbabwe's Permanent Secretary of Information, Nick Magwana, dismissed the U.S. sanctions, saying that Sanyantwe never fired a gun, nor order anyone to do so.
There is no justification for any Zimbabwean citizen to be placed under sanctions. More so, those sanctions are not coming through Chapter 7 of the United Nations Security Council. So these sanctions are not justified. We have a process as a nation where if somebody has committed a crime, they will be charged for that crime and by our institutions, but not for any country to put anyone under sanctions. More so for a Zimbabwean diplomat who is executing his job in another country. That tends to incapacitate that diplomat from functioning, and we think it's wrong as a nation.
But some human rights activists, Mr. Mangwana, are saying that it appears Harare was reluctant to sanction Mr. Sanyatwe because after the allegations that he led the unit that allegedly killed some protesters in Harare, he actually was seconded for an ambassadorial role.
The first thing, let's start by saying the events of the 1st of August occurred. It was President Mnangagwa, in the abundance of his wisdom, who instituted an internationally recognized commission of inquiry. It is him as well who decided that after recommendations had been made, that he will take those recommendations on board. And he set up a cabinet committee to oversee the implementation of those recommendations, which is already in motion. We are implementing those recommendations. This did not come from any foreign power or any entity that was pushing President Mnangagwa to institute this commission of inquiry, but it was his need for accountability and transparency. And that includes people that were in pivotal positions who could have had a role in the policy that happened on the 1st of August and that which occurred in January. Now, there is nobody who has been convicted of any crime. Even the Motlanthe Commission did not apportion blame on any particular individual. Yes, they made recommendations and said things could have been handled differently. But that is not to say a retired General Sanyatwe did one, two, or the other. So the accountability people are talking about does not apply because in the first place, he has been removed from the key institution he was leading and is leading a different institution. He is representing Zimbabwe. He has the right to earn a living like any other person.
Nick Mangwana is Zimbabwe's Permanent Secretary of Information. He spoke from Harare with Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe's service. Rwanda briefly closed its border with the Democratic Republic of Congo on Thursday after Ebola cases were detected in the Congolese border city of Goma. Eugene Uwimana has more from Rubavu in western Rwanda.
At exactly 2 p.m. Central African time, that's when people were again allowed to cross between Rwanda and the DRC. For several hours Thursday, the situation at the border appeared to have dramatically changed as Rwandan authorities shut down nearly all movement between the two countries. The busy border crossing between the cities of Goma and Gisenyi was exclusively an exit for Congolese nationals leaving Rwanda. Now, although the movement is not busy as usual, people are crossing. Earlier, several Rwandan traders told VOA that they were denied entry into Congo. This 35-year-old man was asked not to be identified, described his experience. I woke in the morning, ready to go into the DRC. Arriving here, they said, we are not allowed to cross the border because of Ebola. I tried to come to the border, but police officers pushed me back. Another man, aged 25, said the news came as a surprise to the many Rwandans who enter Congo each week to conduct business. He said they did not tell us when they will close this border. Rwanda's Minister of Health, Dr. Diane Kashumba, told VOA there was no directive to close the border. However, she said authorities are urging people not to enter Congo.
The
Rwanda-DRC border is not closed because when these responsible authorities have their ways of announcing it, writing it. What we did is to strengthen strategies to educate citizens, telling them if you can avoid to go there, don't go. The brief border shutdown came after officials said a one-year-old girl in Goma had contracted the Ebola virus. The girl's father died of Ebola on Wednesday. This was the first time the border had been closed since the Ebola outbreak began in Congo a year ago. The virus has killed more than 1,800 people so far. There have been no reported Ebola cases in Rwanda, but a total of 3 people have been confirmed as infected in Goma. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Rubavu, Rwanda.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, August 2nd. Daybreak Africa time, 15 minutes past the hour. Zambia's ruling Patriotic Front Party says President Edgar Lungu has demonstrated the political commitment to weed out corruption. The remark came after the president directed government agencies to help the Anti-Corruption Commission determine the owners of 48 mansions in the capital, Lusaka, estimated to be worth millions of dollars. But the leader of the main opposition United Party for National Development, UPND, Hakainde Hichilema, says the directive is not enough. He has since issued a 48-hour ultimatum to President Lungu to locate the owners of the mansions. Sunday Chanda is media director of the ruling Patriotic Front Party.
The president does not direct the Anti-Corruption Commission with regards to how the investigations must be carried out, etc. Now, this is a matter of public interest, and the president has since directed the Minister of Home Affairs. The directive is very clear, that all investigative wings must collaborate with the Anti-Corruption Commission to ensure that no stone is left unturned in this particular matter. The president has also been very clear that whoever is responsible must be brought to justice and that this man must see its day in court. That is what any responsible head of state would do. Now, we must also make it very clear here that the 48 units, housing units being talked about are already the property of the state. That must be made very, very clear.
Some people are saying it was very important for an ultimatum to be issued to the government because the intelligence agencies should have been able to work closely with the Anti-Corruption Commission or the ACC to fish out those who built those 48 houses and who are not claiming it at the moment.
Peter, you know, with, like with any investigation, any whether it's a financial crime whatsoever, it would make and excite the court of public opinion for the president to say that I want these investigations concluded within 72 hours. But we know the nature of investigations is that you cannot determine how long an investigation is going to take. You might score and find the get your findings within 24 hours, or it's going to be beyond 24 hours, or it might go beyond 48 hours. What is important is the political will and the directive the president has given.
The UPND is saying that this is a clear indication of the president lacking the political will to fight against corruption because several allegations have been made against some members of his administration, but the president has yet to take decisive action to force those ministers to leave their posts for a thorough investigation to be done to be cleared before they are restored.
The president sought to uphold the Constitution of the Republic of Zambia. It is very clear that the law provides for the presumption of innocence for any citizen. And the laws that we have, including the SEC Act, do not compel any minister to resign on account of an allegation. The Anti-Corruption Commission Act does not compel the head of state to fire anyone on account of an allegation. This is the law of Zambia. We are a country of laws and not a country of men.
Sunday Chanda is the media director for Zambia's ruling Patriotic Front Party. He spoke with U.S. Peter Clotty from the capital, Lusaka. As Liberians await the results of this week's contentious senatorial and legislative by-elections, the chair of the country's elections commission says unknown individuals threatened to burn down his house last night if the commission did not announce the results. Jerome Kokoya says the Minister of Justice sent police protection to his house last night.
Last night, between 6 and 7 p.m., security reported that there were more than 20-some more men came out my gate, and they were thinking battle cry or whatever they call that, and then demanded that if the election results were not given, they would bring my house with the people in there. So everybody was here, and they called me. I was just leaving work to come in, and immediately called the Minister of Justice, who was gracious enough to send some police officers to help provide security, and they are currently here.
Mr. Chairman, you said that the people at your house were chanting battle cry. These days, it seems that there are too many chants in Monrovia particularly. Do you know which group was doing the chanting?
No, I don't know which group was doing that. And I don't know. Security did not describe the kind of chant they were chanting. But he told us that there were more than 20 men that came here and then threatening to burn the place.
Now, Mr. Chairman, your commission has not released the final results of this by-election. Is that unusual? Because we just have a senatorial election and a representative, House of Representative election, two people. Is it kind of usual or is just according to the timeline?
No, Jim, it is not unusual at all. The timeline submitted by the Constitution is starting in 15 days, within which we gave results. And several factors are taken into consideration. It depends on the county election. Abundant is a highly contested county. It's very, very, very tough. And under the law, once you have complaints against being filed by one of the candidates, or any other candidate for that matter, you have to resolve that before you even proceed. So what we have here is that we have complaints alleging some foul play at least four precincts in District 15. The complaint was filed by two of the candidates in the representative race, including Ms. Urey. So based on that complaint, we ordered that the results from those precincts be corrected, and that's what we do. Maybe we may have to recheck the ballot. And so initial conference was held today with a complainant, and I think our independent hearing office would immediately begin investigation. So we have to conclude that before we can proceed with the further reporting on the representative side. For the Senate, we are completed about 98%, which we should get might be announcing tomorrow.
Mr. Chairman, we are always happy to have you on Daybreak Africa. Thank you very much.
Thank you, James. I appreciate it.
Jerome Kokoya is chair of the National Elections Commission of Liberia. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. A delegation of members of the U.S. House of Representatives, including Speaker Nancy Pelosi, today, Friday, wrapped up a week-long trip to Ghana. Representative Karen Bass, a member of the delegation, spoke with viewers Kate Pound-Dawson about the trip and her visit to the historic Cape Coast and Elmina castles, the starting point for millions of Africans sold into slavery in the United States.
Well, first of all, I was very honored to be a part of a delegation of the Congressional Black Caucus that was led by Speaker Nancy Pelosi, the most powerful woman elected official in the United States. And I think that that's very significant on the year of the 400th anniversary to go to Ghana. We met with the president, we met with the speaker, we met with members of parliament, and most notable, before we talk about Cape Coast and Elmina, was the speaker addressed parliament yesterday and delivered a message of all support and commitment to building a strong relationship between the United States and Ghana, as well as acknowledging our collective history. When members of the Black Caucus, along with the speaker, went to Cape Coast and Elmina, needless to say, it was a very tragic, a very powerful visit. It was always incredible to imagine the raw, ruthless brutality, the inhumane treatment of our people, and the fact that all of us know that some of our family members, some of our ancestors were in those dungeons. And just the knowledge of that is powerful and painful. But then on the other side of it, we also have to acknowledge that after going through the Middle Passage, after being held in dungeons, brutalized, raped, beaten, and surviving 250 years of enslavement, we as a people are incredibly strong because not only did we survive, but we have thrived in every way. And so that's what the trip meant. All of us are reflecting on it, and I know that we will be for some time, but it was an amazing experience, and we're very proud and thankful that our speaker was very interested, not just willing, but very interested in attending, participating, and learning.
Representative Karen Bass is a member of a delegation of U.S. lawmakers who are currently visiting Ghana. She spoke with viewers Kate Pound-Dawson from Accra. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sports in Nigeria, where Nigeria's senior national women's basketball team, the Tigress, are gunning for their fourth African title in Dakar, Senegal. The competition, which begins on August the 10th and ends on August the 18th, will see the Tigress squared out against Tunisia and Cameroon in the same group. In more than four decades of competition, the Tigress have won the continent's Pinnacle Nations Tournament thrice in 2003, 2005, before their latest success 2 years ago in Bamako, Mali. But Otis Hugley, head coach of the senior national women's basketball team, says Nigeria is still a work in progress in spite of being tipped to win the 2019 Federation of International Basketball Association Women Afro Basketball Championships.
What they did in 2015 is not lost on us. Some of these girls were there. They remember. We don't care who we play. We want to crush them. We want to leave no doubt. And hopefully we'll do like we said before. We shook up the world in Spain. Now we just want to rock Africa.
In athletics news, the governing body of World Athletics, the IWAF, has hailed the Swiss court decision that ruled Caster Semenya out of their world championships as a victory for parity and clarity. Olympic 800 meters champion Caster Semenya of South Africa is fighting an International Association of Athletics Federation regulation that middle distance female runners with a high natural level of testosterone must take medication to reduce it. This week, the Swiss Federal Tribunal reversed a ruling that temporarily lifted the IWF's testosterone regulations imposed on Caster Semenya, effectively ruling her out of the September 28th to October the 6th World Championships in Doha, Qatar. Caster Semenya ran the quickest ever 800 meters on United States soil at a Prefontaine Classic Diamond League meeting on June 30th in a time of 1 minute 55.70 seconds. Staying with the Court of Arbitration for Sports, the court has revoked the decision of the Confederation of African Football's CAF Executive Committee to have a replay of the 2018-2019 CAF Champions League final between Osporons of Tunisia and Wydad Casablanca. In a statement released in Lausanne, CAF said the CAF Executive Committee did not have jurisdiction to order that the second leg of the May 31st final be replayed and has decided to annul the decision challenged. The Swiss-based court's decision leaves the final in limbo after the original fixture was abandoned and the match awarded to Esperance after opponents Wydad Casablanca left the pitch following a disputed decision. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Zimbabwe's main opposition party, human rights groups, and churches have marked the one-year anniversary of the army killing of about a dozen people protesting against the delayed release of last year's election results. Some did not attend Thursday's ceremony because they are still recovering from the 2018 shooting. Meanwhile, the United States on Thursday placed a former commander of Zimbabwe's army on its targeted sanctions list for his alleged involvement. In a statement, the State Department said it had publicly designated Anselm Nyamo Sanyantwe for his involvement in gross human rights violations. And as Liberians await the results of this week's contentious senatorial and legislative election, the chair of the country's elections commission says unknown individuals threatened to burn down his house last night if the commission did not release the results. That is it for this Friday, August 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as Samson Omale, our sports editor, I'm James Barty, wishing you a very good weekend.
Sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.